ओम गुरु ब्रह्मा गुरु विष्णु गुरुदेव महेश्वर गुरुदेव पराब्रह्म तस्मै श्री गुरुदेव नमः। ओम स्तवकाय च धर्मस्य सर्वधर्मस्वरूपिणे अवतार वरिष्ठाय रामकृष्णाय धी नमः। ओम श्रीमद्भगवानन्दाय नमः। Jema, everyone.
Jema.
So tomorrow, actually in India right now, is the 150th birth anniversary of Swami Vivekananda. So for many months now across India, especially at the Ramakrishna Mission centers throughout India and all over the world really, they've been preparing and having special pujas and special commemorations, doing special community service. And in Delhi Center, I think just recently, they had the Dalai Lama speak, and a bunch of, you know, the Prime Minister of India came and spoke. And so it's a big thing. I mean, I would not be here, Kali Mandir, we would not be here without Swamiji coming in 1893 and really carrying on Sri Ramakrishna's work in a very unique and powerful way. So I thought that this being such a momentous occasion, we would take a little break from our boat ride with Keshav Sen and Vijay Goswami, and we'll just read a little bit from the complete works of Swami Vivekananda. Just a few excerpts. I picked just a few things. So, you know, it won't be a long satsang tonight. I just picked a letter, one of his letters to his brother disciples, an excerpt from some of his famous lectures, and then a few of his very incredibly beautiful poems that he wrote, to kind of give the different moods of Swami Vivekananda, because he did have many moods. So a few weeks ago, when Guruji was here, Swami Bhajanamaya, he read at the end of his Bhagavatam reading, he quoted, there was one letter that Swamiji had written in September, 25th September of 1894, he was in New York. So if you think about it, he arrived, I believe, in I think May or June of 1893 into America. And so he'd been in America the whole time. It's over a year after, you know, not having really left India. And he was here in the West, you know, planting seeds everywhere he went. So at this point, he's in New York. And a few weeks ago, Guruji read from that letter one part. So I'm going to read from the same letter. But this is the beginning of the letter, because this letter captures something of Swami Vivekananda's mood at this time, his early impressions of America after he had been there for 1 year, what he had observed, his relationship to it, what he felt he was doing, and also his relationship with his brother disciples. You know, you think about it, you know, before Swami Vivekananda left for America, all the direct disciples of Sri Ramakrishna, the sannyasin disciples, they were out wandering. Swami Akandananda was off in Tibet. Swami Turiyananda was in Rishikesh doing tapasya. I mean, all of them were wandering everywhere. They were wandering sannyasi. They were wandering across India. Swamiji himself wandered the length and breadth of India. And but here we see something, the mission, the Ramakrishna mission beginning to coalesce in Swamiji's mind. What was going, and he knew something big was happening. They knew something very powerful was happening, but they, at that early, in those early stages, none of the direct disciples really knew what was going to happen. Even Swamiji himself wasn't quite sure what was going to manifest. So we get a little glimpse through these, especially through these letters, his letters to his disciples. This is translated from Bengali. So you get a sense of that one side, not necessarily the public side of Swamiji, but this is his, you know, his clarion call to his brother disciples. So, 25th December, 1894, written from New York. My dear brothers, glad to receive some news from you. It gives me great pleasure to learn that Shashi, Swami Ramakrishnananda, and others are making a stir. We must create a stir. Nothing short of this will do. You will be throwing the whole world into convolution. Victory to the Guru. You know, great undertakings are always fraught with many obstacles. It is these obstacles which knock and shape great characters. Is it in the power of missionaries and people of that sort to withstand this shock? Should a fool succeed where scholars have failed? It is no go, my boy. Set your mind at ease about that. In every attempt, there will be one set of men who will applaud and another who will pick holes. Go on doing your work. What need have you to reply to any party? Truth alone triumphs, not falsehood. Through truth lies Devayana, the path of the gods. It's quoting from the Mundaka Upanishad. In that first part, truth alone triumphs. Satyameva Jayate. That's on every rupee note in India. That's the motto of India. Truth alone triumphs. Everything will come by degrees. Here in summer, they all go to the seaside. I also did the same. They have got almost a mania for boating and yachting. The yacht is a kind of light vessel which everyone, young and old, who has the means, possesses. They set sail in them every day to the sea and return home to eat and drink and dance, while music continues day and night. Pianos render it a botheration to stay indoors. You can imagine, it's like, see, people don't really change. It's like, you know, then you're, oh, the kids are turning on the music so loud and the stereo and the game, you know, on the Xbox. And back then they had the pianos and they're playing the piano. People don't change. He continues. Excuse me. There are a good many spiritualists in this country. The medium is one who induces the spirit. He goes behind the screen, and out of this come ghosts of all sizes and all colors. I have witnessed some cases, but they seem to be a hoax. I shall test some more before I come to a final conclusion. Many of the spiritualists respect me. Next comes Christian Science. They form the most influential party nowadays, figuring everywhere. They're spreading by leaps and bounds and causing heartburn to the Orthodox. They're Vedantins. I mean, they have picked up a few doctrines of the Advaita and grafted them upon the Bible. And they cure diseases by proclaiming, Soham, Soham, I am he, I am he, through strength of mind. They all admire me highly. Nowadays, the Orthodox section of this country are crying for help. Devil worship is but a thing of the past. They are mortally afraid of me and exclaim, what a pest! Thousands of men and women follow him. He is going to root out orthodoxy. Well, the torch has been applied, and the conflagration that has set in through the grace of the Guru will not be put out. In course of time, the bigots will have their breath knocked out of them. The theosophists have not much power, but they too are dead set against the orthodox section. The Christian Science is exactly like our Kartabaja sect. Say, I have no disease, and you are whole. And say, I am he, Soham, and you are quits, be at large. This is a thoroughly materialistic country. The people of this Christian land will recognize religion if only you can cure diseases, work miracles, and open up avenues to money, and they understand little of anything else. But there are honorable exceptions. Again, things really don't change, do they? People here have found a new type of man in me. Even the Orthodox are at their wits' end, and people are now looking up to me with an eye of reverence. Is there a greater strength than that of Brahmacharya, purity, my boy? I am now busy writing a reply to the Madras address, which was published in all the newspapers here and created a sensation. If it be cheap, I shall send it in print, but if dear, I shall send it a typewritten copy. To you I shall also send a copy. Have it published in the Indian Mirror. the Indian mirror. The unmarried girls of this country are very good and have a good deal of self-respect. These people are come out of Virochana's race. Virochana was the leader of the demons. He was Prahlad's son. So, making many interesting points here. These people they come from Virochana. To them, ministering to the body is a great thing. They would trim and polish and give their whole attention to that. 1,000 instruments for paring nails, 10,000 for hair cutting, and who can count the varieties of dress and toilet and perfumery? They are good-natured, kind, and truthful. All is right with them, but that enjoyment is their god. It is a country where money flows like a river, with beauty as its ripple, and learning its waves, and which rolls in luxury. Longing for success in action in this world, men worship the deities, for success is quickly attained through action in this world of man. In the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 6, verse 12. Here you have a wonderful manifestation of grit and power. What strength, what practicality, and what manhood. Horses huge as elephants are drawing carriages that are as big as houses. You may take this as a specimen of the gigantic proportions and other things also. Here is a manifestation of tremendous energy. They look with veneration upon women who play a most prominent part in their lives. Here this form of worship has attained its perfection. That is the long and short of it. But to come to the point, well, I am almost at my wit's end to see the women of this country. They take me to the shops and everywhere as if I were a child. They do all sorts of work. I cannot even do a 16th part of what they do. They are like Lakshmi in beauty and like Saraswati in virtues. They are the Divine Mother incarnate, and worshipping them, one verily attains perfection in everything. Great God, are we to be counted among men? If I can raise 1,000 such Madonnas, incarnations of the Divine Mother in our country before I die, I shall die in peace. Then only will your countrymen become worthy of their name. I am really struck with wonder to see the women here. How gracious the Divine Mother is on them. Most wonderful women these. They are about to corner the men who have become nearly worsted in the competition. Also keep in mind, this was during the suffragette movement. In fact, I forgot who the name was, who was one of the main leaders of the suffragette was her cohort in the whole struggle. My mind is blanking on the name, but she was a great admirer of Swami Vivekananda. It is all through thy grace, O Mother. I shall not rest till I root out this distinction of sex. Is there any sex distinction in the Atman? Out with the differentiation between man and woman. All is Atman. Give up the identification with the body and stand up. Say, asti, asti, everything is. Cherish positive thoughts. By dwelling too much upon nashti, nashti, it is not, the whole country is going to ruin. Soham, 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 I am he. Shivoham, I am Shiva. What a botheration. In every soul is infinite strength. And should you turn yourselves into cats and dogs by harboring negative thoughts? Who dares to preach negativism? Who do you call weak and powerless? Shivoham, Shivoham. I feel as if a thunderbolt strikes me on the head when I hear people dwell on negative thoughts. That sort of self-deprecating attitude is another name for disease. Do you call it that? Humility? It is vanity in disguise. The external badge does not confer spirituality. It is same-sightedness to all beings, which is the test of a liberated soul. I am he, I am Shiva, of the essence of knowledge and bliss. He frees himself from the meshes of this world as a lion from its cage. This Atman is not accessible to the weak. Hurl yourselves on the world like an avalanche. Let the world crack and twain under your weight. Hara Hara Mahadev. One must save the self by one's own self, by personal prowess. Will such a day come when this life will go for the sake of others' good? The world is not a child's play, and great men are those who build highways for others with their heart's blood. This has been taking place through eternity. That one builds a bridge by laying down his own body, and thousands of others cross the river through its help. Be it so, be it so. I am Shiva. All of that. We must mix with all and alienate none. All the powers of good against all the powers of evil. That is what we want. Do not insist upon everyone believing, everybody's believing in our guru. You shall have to edit a magazine, half in Bengali and half in Hindi, and if possible, another in English. It won't do to be roaming aimlessly. Wherever you go, you must start a permanent preaching center. Then only will people begin to change. I am writing a book, and as soon as it is finished, I run for home. Always remember that Sri Ramakrishna came for the good of the world, not for name and fame. Spread only what he came to teach. Never mind his flame. It will spread of itself. Directly you insist on everybody is accepting your guru, you will be creating a sect, and everything will fall to the ground. So beware. Have a kind word for all. It spoils work to show temper. Let people say whatever they like. Stick to your own convictions, and rest assured, the world will be at your feet. They say, have faith in this fellow or that fellow. But I say, have faith in yourself first. That's the way. Have faith in yourself. All power is in you. Be conscious and bring it out. Say, I can do everything. Even the poison of a snake is powerless if you can firmly deny it. He's paraphrasing what Thakur said last week. You can see how the seeds of all those, all that interaction with Sri Ramakrishna, with his guru, is now bearing fruit. Beware. No saying nay. No negative thoughts. Say yay, yay, soham, soham. I am he, I am he. What makes you weep, my friend? In you is all power. Summon up your all-powerful nature, O mighty one, and this whole universe will lie at your feet. It is the self alone that predominates and not matter. So that's from that letter. And this is from his talks on bhakti. And you can see kind of, I picked these excerpts to kind of show a little kind of a journey, if you will. To show how different ideas are then, fleshed out and evolve. You can see already how the teachings of Sri Ramakrishna are being woven into it, but he's presenting it in a way. Now he was writing for his brothers, for his brother monastic disciples. So it has a certain tone. Here he's talking, in English to a Western audience. So his tone shifts, but the same ideas. There's like a continuity of this underlying of these underlying principles. But you can see how he weaves different flavors and moods into these underlying principles from that very divine thread. So parabhakti. So the preparatory renunciation is this particular topic. And it's very beautifully said. When the human soul draws back from the things of the world and tries to go into deeper things, when man, the spirit, which is here somehow become concretized and materialized, understands that he is thereby going to be destroyed and to be reduced almost into mere matter, and turns his face away from matter, then begins renunciation, then begins real spiritual growth. The karma yogi's renunciation is in the shape of giving up all the fruits of his action. He is not attached to the results of his labor. He does not care for any reward here or hereafter. The raja yogi knows that the whole of nature is intended for the soul to acquire experience, and that the result of all the experiences of the soul is for it to become aware of its eternal separateness from nature. The human soul has to understand and realize that it has been spirit and not matter through eternity, and that this conjunction of it with matter is and can only be for a time. The Raja Yogi learns the lesson of renunciation through his own experience of nature. The Jnana Yogi has the harshest of all renunciations to go through, as he has to realize from the very first that the whole of this solid-looking nature is all an illusion. He has to understand that all this is a kind of manifestation of power in nature, that all that is a kind of manifestation of power in nature belongs to the soul and not to nature. He has to know from the very start that all knowledge and all experience are in the soul and not in nature. So he has at once and by sheer force of rational conviction to tear himself away from all bondage to nature. He lets nature and all that belongs to her go. He lets them vanish and tries to stand alone. Of all renunciations, the most natural, so to say, is that of bhakti yoga. Here, there is no violence, nothing to give up, nothing to tear off, as it were, from ourselves, nothing from which we have violently to separate ourselves. The bhakta's renunciation is easy, smooth, flowing, and as natural as the things around us. You can see again, like we were talking 2 weeks ago, Sri Ramakrishna was talking about, he is Atman for the yogis, he is Bhagavan for the devotees, he is Brahman for the Advaitins. Again, it's that same being, that our principle that we're all working our way towards. We just have different ways of relating to that one being, our principle, and different ways of accessing it. And so he's saying here, it's all renunciation, different ways of renouncing, but the end result is the same. Even though it's the same, yet you can say the experience of it is different, but it's that same ultimate truth. So the bhakta's renunciation is easy, smooth-flowing, and as natural as the things around us. We see the manifestation of this sort of renunciation, although more or less in the form of caricatures, every day around us. A man begins to love a woman. After a while, he loves another, and the first woman he lets go. She drops out of his mind smoothly, gently, without his feeling the want of her at all. A woman loves a man. She then begins to love another man, and the first one drops off from her mind quite naturally. A man loves his own city. Then he begins to love his own country, and the intense love for his little city drops off smoothly, naturally. Again, a man learns to love the whole world. His love for country, his intense fanatical patriotism drops off without hurting him, without any manifestation of violence. An uncultured man loves the pleasures of the senses intensely. As he becomes cultured, he begins to love intellectual pleasures, and his sense enjoyments become less and less. No man can enjoy a meal with the same gusto or pleasure as a dog or a wolf. But those pleasures which a man gets from intellectual experiences and achievements, the dog can never enjoy. At first, pleasure is in association with the lowest senses, but as soon as an animal reaches a higher plane of existence, the lower kind of pleasures become less intense. In human society, the nearer the man is to the animal, the stronger is his pleasure in the senses, and the higher and the more cultured the man is, the greater is his pleasure in intellectual and such other finer pursuits. So when a man gets even higher than that, than the plane of the intellect, higher than that of mere thought, when he gets to the plane of spirituality and of divine inspiration, he finds there a state of bliss, compared with which all the pleasures of the senses, or even of the intellect, are as nothing. When the moon shines brightly, all the stars become dim, and when the sun shines, the moon herself becomes dim. The renunciation necessary for the attainment of bhakti is not obtained by killing anything, but just comes in as naturally as in the presence of an increasingly stronger light. The less intense one becomes dimmer and dimmer until they vanish away completely. So this love of the pleasures of the senses and of the intellect is all made dim and thrown aside and cast into the shade by the love of God himself. That love of God grows and assumes a form which is called parabhakti, a are supreme devotion. Forms vanish, rituals fly away, books are superseded, images, temples, churches, religions and sects, countries and nationalities, all these little limitations and bondages fall off by their own nature from him who knows this love of God. Nothing remains to bind him or fetter his freedom. And I love this analogy he uses. A ship all of a sudden comes near a magnetic rock, and its iron bolts and bars are all attracted and drawn out, and the planks get loosened and freely float on the water. Divine grace thus loosens the binding bolts and bars of the soul, and it becomes free. So in this renunciation, auxiliary to devotion, there is no harshness, no dryness, no struggle, no repression, nor suppression. The bhakta has not to suppress any single one of his emotions. He only strives to intensify them and direct them to God. Here's a different mood of Swami Vivekananda. One question is generally asked, and it is this, that this may lead to a tremendous amount of difficulty. Every one of us will think, I am God, and whatever I do or think must be good, for God can do no evil. In the first place, even taking this danger of misinterpretation for granted, can it be proved that on the other side of the same, danger does not exist? They have been worshipping a God in heaven, separate from them, and of whom they are much afraid. They have been born shaking with fear, and all their life they will go on shaking. Has the world been made better? Has the world been made much better by this? Those who have understood and worshipped a personal God, and those who have understood and worshipped an impersonal God, on which side have been the great workers of the world? Gigantic workers, gigantic moral powers, certainly on the impersonal. How can you expect morality to be developed through fear? It can never be. Where one sees another, where one hears another, that is Maya. When one does not see another, when one does not hear another, when everything has become the Atman, who sees whom? Who perceives whom? It is all he and all I at the same time. The soul has become pure. Then, and then alone, we understand what love is. Love cannot come through fear. Its basis is freedom. When we really begin to love the world, then we understand what is meant by brotherhood of mankind, and not before. So it is not right to say that the impersonal idea will lead to a tremendous amount of evil in this world, as if the other doctrine never lent itself to works of evil, as if it never did lead to sectarianism, deluging the world with blood and causing men to tear each other to pieces. My God is the greatest God. Let us decide it by a free fight. That is the outcome of dualism all over the world. Come out, and this is a very famous quote from Swamiji, come out into the broad open light of day. Come out from the narrow little paths. For how long can the infinite soul rest, content to live and die in small ruts? Come out into the universe of light. Everything in the universe is yours. Stretch out your arms and embrace it with love. If you have ever wanted to do that, you have felt God. You remember that passage from the Sermon of Buddha, how he sent a thought of love towards the south, the north, the east, and the west, above and below, until the whole universe was filled with this love so grand, great, and infinite. When you have that feeling, you have true personality. The whole universe is one person. Let go the little things. Give up the small for the infinite. Give up small enjoyments for infinite bliss. It is all yours, for the impersonal includes the personal. So God is personal and impersonal at the same time. And man, the infinite, impersonal man, is manifesting himself as person. We, the infinite, have limited ourselves, as it were, into small parts. The Vedanta says that infinity is our true nature. It will never vanish. It will abide forever. But we are limiting ourselves by our karma, which like a chain round our necks has dragged us into this limitation. Break that chain and be free. Trample law under your feet. There is no law in human nature. There is no destiny, no fate. How can there be law in infinity? Freedom is its watchword. Freedom is its nature, its birthright. Be free, and then have any number of personalities you like. Then we will play like the actor who comes upon the stage and plays the part of a beggar. Contrast him with the actual beggar walking in the streets. The scene is perhaps the same in both cases. The words perhaps are the same. But yet what difference? The one enjoys his beggary, while the other is suffering misery from it. And what makes this difference? The one is free, and the other is bound. The actor knows his beggary is not true, or that he has assumed it for play, while the real beggar thinks that it is his too familiar state, and that he has to bear it whether he wills it or not. This is the law. So long as we have no knowledge of our real nature, we are beggars, jostled about by every force in nature, and made slaves of everything in nature. We cry all over the world for help, but help never comes to us. We cry to imaginary beings, and yet it never comes. But still we hope help will come, and thus in weeping, wailing, and hoping, one life is passed, and the same play goes on and on. Be free. Hope for nothing from anyone. I am sure if you look back upon your lives, you will find that you are always vainly trying to get help from others, which never came. All the help that has come was from within yourselves. You only had the fruits of what you yourselves worked for, and yet you were strangely hoping all the time for help. A rich man's parlor is always full, but if you notice, you do not find the same people there. The visitors are always hoping that they will get something from those wealthy men, but they never do. So are our lives spent in hoping, 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 which never comes to an end. Give up hope, says the Vedanta. Why should you hope? You have everything. Nay, you are everything. What are you hoping for? If a king goes mad and runs about trying to find the king of his country, he will never find him, because he is the king himself. He may go through every village and city in his own country, seeking in every house, weeping and wailing, but he will never find him, because he is the king himself. It is better that we know we are God and give up this fool's search after him, and knowing that we are God, we become happy and contented. Give up all these mad pursuits, and then play your part in the universe as an actor on the stage. The whole vision is changed, and instead of an eternal prison, this world has become a playground. Instead of a land of competition, it is a land of bliss, where there is perpetual spring, flowers bloom, and butterflies flit about. This world becomes heaven, which formerly was hell. To the eyes of the bound, it is a tremendous place of torment, but to the eyes of the free, it is quite otherwise. This one life is the universal life. Heavens and all those places are here. All the gods are here, the prototypes of man. The gods did not create man after their type, but man created gods. And here are the prototypes. Here is Indra. Here is Varuna, and all the gods of the universe. We have been projecting our little doubles, and we are the originals of these gods. We are the real, the only gods to be worshipped. This is the view of Vedanta, and this its practicality. When we have become free, we do not need to go mad and throw up society and rush off to die in the forest or the cave. We shall remain where we are, only we shall understand the whole thing. The same phenomena will remain, but with a new meaning. We do not know the world yet. It is only through freedom that we see what it is and understand its nature. We shall see that this so-called law or fate or destiny occupied only an infinitesimal part of our nature. It was only one side, but on the other side there was freedom all the time. We did not know this, and that is why we have been trying to save ourselves from evil by hiding our faces in the ground like a hunted hare. Through delusion, we have been trying to forget our nature, and yet we could not. It was always calling upon us, and all our search after God or gods or external freedom was a search after our real nature. We mistook the voice. We thought it was from the fire, or from a god, or the sun, or moon, or stars, but at last we have found that it was from within ourselves. Within ourselves is this eternal voice, speaking of eternal freedom. It is music. Its music is eternally going on. Part of this music of the soul has become the earth, the law, this universe, but it was always ours, and always will be. In one word, the ideal of Vedanta is to know man as he really is, and this is its message, that if you cannot worship your brother man, the manifested God, how can you worship a God who is unmanifested? Do you not remember what the Bible says? If you cannot love your brother whom you have seen, how can you love God whom you have not seen? If you cannot see God in the human face, how can you see him in the clouds, or imagine or images made of dull, dead matter, or in mere fictitious stories of our brain? I shall call you religious from the day you begin to see God in men and women. And then you will understand what is meant by turning the left cheek to the man who strikes you on the right. When you see man as God, everything, even the tiger, will be welcome. Whatever comes to you is but the Lord, the Eternal, the Blessed One, appearing to us in various forms as our father and mother and friend and child. They are all our own soul playing with us. So then we'll end up tonight with several poems to show a different mood. I picked four poems. And you can see kind of as they go, there's a continuity. And yet, again, these moods are so completely different. And yet, the principles, again, that is woven through them are very similar. This is a short poem. It's called The Cup. This is your cup, the cup assigned to you from the beginning. Nay, my child, I know how much of that dark drink is your own brew of fault and passion, ages long ago, in the deep years of yesterday, I know. This is your road, a painful road and drear. I made the stones that never give you rest. I set your friend in pleasant ways and clear, and he shall come like you unto my breast. But you, my child, must travel here. This is your task. It has no joy nor grace, but it is not meant for any other hand. And in my universe hath measured place. Take it. I do not bid you understand. I bid you close your eyes to see my face. The next one is called And Let Shama Dance There. This is a intense poem. This is translated from Bengali. At one point I even contemplated a tattoo of some stanzas of this. But yes, you can see Shama refers to Mother Kali. You can see this mood is very different from the previous. Beauteous blossoms ravishing with perfume, swarms of maddened bees buzzing all around, the silver moon, a shower of sweet smile, which all the dwellers of heaven above shed lavishly upon the homes of earth. The soft Malaya breeze, whose magic touch opens to view distant memories' folds, murmuring rivers and brooks, rippling lakes, with restless brahmaras wheeling over gently waving lotuses unnumbered. Foaming flow cascades, a streaming music, to which echo mountain caves in return. Warblers full of sweet flowing melody, hidden in leaves, pour hearts out, love's discourse. The rising orb of day, the painter divine, with his golden brush but lightly touches the canvas earth, and a wealth of colors floods at once o'er the bosom of nature, truly a museum of lovely hues, waking up a whole sea of sentiments. The roll of thunder, the crashing of clouds, war of elements spreading earth and sky, darkness vomiting forth blinding darkness, the pralaya wind angrily roaring in quick bursts of dazzling splendor flashes, blood-red terrific lightning, dealing death, monster waves roaring like thunder foaming, rush impetuous to leap mountain peaks. The earth booms furious, reels and totters, sinks down to its ruin, hurled from its place, piercing the ground, streaming forth tremendous flames. Mighty ranges blow up into atoms. A lovely villa on a lake of blue, festooned with dusters of water lilies, the heart blood of ripe grapes capped with white foam, whispering softly tells a tale of passion. The melody of the harp floods the ears, and by its air, time, and harmony rich, enhances desire in the breast of man. What stirring emotions, how many hot sighs of love and warm tears coursing down, the bimba-red lips of the youthful fair, the two blue eyes, two oceans of feelings, the two hands eager to advance, love's cage, in which the heart, like a bird, lies captive. The martial music bursts, the trumpets blow, the ground shakes under the warrior's tread, the roar of cannon, the rattle of guns, volumes of smoke, the gruesome battlefield, the thundering artillery vomits fire in thousand directions, shells burst and strike vital parts of the body. Elephants and horses mounted are blown up in space. The earth trembles under this infernal dance. A million heroes, mounted on steeds, charge and capture the enemy's ordnance. Piercing through the smoke and shower of shells and rain of bullets, forward goes the flag, the emblem of victory, of heroism, with the blood yet hot streaming down the staff. Followed by the rifles, drunk with war spirit. Lo, the ensign falls, but the flag proceeds onwards on the shoulder of another. Under his feet swell heaps of warriors, perished in battle, but he falters not. The flesh hankers for contacts of pleasure, the senses for enchanting strains of song, the mind hungers for peals of laughter sweet, the heart pants to reach realms beyond sorrow. Say, who cares exchange the soothing moonlight for the burning rays of the noontide sun? The wretch whose heart is like the scorching sun, even he fondly loves the balmy moon. Indeed, all thirst for joy. Breathes there the wretch who hugs pain and sorrow to his bosom. Misery is his cup of happiness. Deadly venom is his drink of nectar. Poison in his throat, yet he clings to hope. Lo, how all are scarred, how all are scared by the terrific. None seek Elokishi, whose form is death. Elokishi is she who has disheveled hair, Makali. The deadly, frightful sword, reeking with blood, they take from her hand and put a lute instead. Thou dreaded Kali, the all-destroyer, thou alone art true. Thy shadow's shadow is indeed the pleasant Vanamali. Krishna is the name of Krishna, who wears the garland of flowers. Oh, terrible mother, cut quick the core, illusion dispel, the dream of happiness, rend asunder the fondness for the flesh. True, they garland thee with skulls, but shrink back in fright and call thee all-merciful. At thy thunder peal of awful laughter, at thy nudeness, for space is thy garment, their hearts sink down with terror, but they say, it is the demons that Mother Kali kills. They only pretend they wish to see thee. For when the time comes, at thy sight they flee. Thou art death. To each and all in the world, thou distributest the plague and disease, vessels of venom filled by thine own hands. O thou insane, thou but cheatest thyself, thou cost not turn thy head, I couldst not turn thy head, lest thou behold, I, the form terrible of the mother. Thou courtest hardship, hoping happiness. Thou wearest cloak of bhakti and worship, with mind full of achieving selfish ends. The blood from the severed head of a kid fills thee with fear. Thy heart throbs at the sight. Verily a coward, compassionate? Bless my soul, a strange state of things indeed. To whom shall I tell the truth? Who will see? Free thyself from the mighty attraction, the maddening wine of love, the charm of sex. Break the harp, forward with the ocean's cry. Drink tears, pledge even life, let the body fall. Awake, O hero, shake off thy vain dreams. Death stands at thy head. Does fear become thee? A load of misery, true though it is, this becoming. Know this to be thy God, his temple. The smashan, the cremation ground. His temple, the smashan, among corpses and funeral pyres, unending battle. That verily is his sacred worship. Constant defeat, let that not unnerve thee. Shattered be the little self, hope, name, and fame. Set up a pyre of them, and make thy heart a burning ground. And let Shama dance there. This next one's a very famous one by Swamiji. Much shorter than the last one, but you can see how this one kind of distills those ideas from that previous poem. This is called Kali the Mother. The stars are blotted out, the clouds are covering clouds. It is darkness vibrant, sonant. In the roaring, whirling wind are the souls of a million lunatics just loose from the prison house, wrenching trees by their roots, sweeping all from the path. The sea has joined the fray and swirls up mountain waves to reach the pitchy sky. The flash of lurid light reveals on every side a thousand shades of death begrimed and black, scattering plagues and sorrows, dancing mad with joy. Come, mother, come, for terror is thy name, death is in thy breath, and every shaking step destroys the world forever. Thou, time, the all-destroyer, come, O mother, come, who dares misery love, and hug the form of death. Dance in destruction's dance. To him the mother comes. And finally tonight, this is probably Swamiji's most famous poem. I remember in Berkeley at the Vedanta Society, on July 4th, we'd all, Swami Aparananda and all of us, all the devotees from the Berkeley Temple, we'd go to Olima, the retreat site. This is all in Northern California, on the other side of the bay. And we go to one area in the forest, and they'd have different readings of quoting Swamiji, but there was always one point where an elderly devotee named Bill Cochran, and we just called him Bill, he would recite this from memory, this poem, Song of the Sannyasin. And one of my favorite parts of the whole year was to go up there and listen to Bill recite from memory, Song of the Sannyasin. Swami Vivekananda composed this at the Thousand Island Park in New York in July in 1895. And you can see again in all these writings and all these talks and letters to him and then these poems, really everything kind of coalesces and he really puts everything in here. Everything is in this poem. The Song of the Sannyasin. Wake up the note, the song that had its birth far off, where worldly taint could never reach, in mountain caves and glades of forest deep, whose calm no sigh for lust or wealth or fame could ever dare to break, where rolled the stream of knowledge, truth, and bliss that follows both. Sing high that note, Sannyasin bold. Say Om Tat Sat Om. Strike off thy fetters, bonds that bind thee down, of shining gold or darker, baser ore, love, hate, good, bad, and all the dual throng. No, slave is slave, caressed or whipped, not free. For fetters, though of gold, are not less strong to bind. Then off with them, Sannyasin bold, say Om Tat Sat Om. Let darkness go, the will-o'-the-wisp that leads with blinking light to pile more gloom on gloom. This thirst for life forever quench, it drags from birth to death and death to birth the soul. He conquers all who conquers self. Know this and never yield, Sannyasin bold, say Om Tat Sat Om. Who sows must reap, they say, and cause must bring the sure effect, good, good, bad, bad, and none escape the law. But whoso wears a form must wear the chain. Too true, but far beyond both name and form is Atman, ever free. Know thou art that, Sannyasin bold, say Om Tat Sat Om. They know not truth who dream such vacant dreams as father, mother, children, wife, and friend. The sexless self, whose father he, whose child, whose friend, whose foe is he who is but one. The self is all in all, none else exists, and thou art that, Sannyasin bold, say Om Tat Sat Om. There is but one, the free, the knower, self, without a name, without a form or stain. In him is Maya dreaming all this dream. The witness, he appears as nature, soul. Know thou art that, Sannyasin bold, say Om Tat Sat Om. Where seekest thou that freedom, friend, this world nor that can give? In books and temples vain thy search. Thine only is the hand that holds the rope that drags thee on. Then cease lament, let go thy hold, Sannyasin bold. Say Om Tat Sat Om. Say, peace to all, for me no danger be to aught that lives. And those that dwell on high and those that lowly creep, I am the self in all. All life, both here and there, do I renounce. All heavens and earths and hells, all hopes and fears. Thus cut thy bonds, Sannyasin bold. Say Om Tat Sat Om. Heed then no more how body lives or goes. Its task is done. Let karma float it down. Let one put garlands on, another kick this frame, say not. No praise or blame can be where praiser praised and blamer blamed are one. Thus be thou calm, Sannyasin bold. Say Om Tat Sat Om. Truth never comes where lust and fame and greed of gain reside. No man who thinks of woman as his wife can ever perfect be. Nor he who owns the least of things, nor he whom anger chains can ever pass through Maya's gates. So give these up, Sannyasin bold. Say Om Tat Sat Om. Have thou no home? What home can hold thee, friend? The sky thy roof, the grass thy bed, and food what chance may bring, well cooked or ill, judge not. No food or drink can taint that noble self which knows itself. Like rolling river free thou ever be, sannyasin bold. Say Om Tat Sat Om. Few only know the truth. The rest will hate and laugh at thee, great one. But pay no heed. Go thou, the free, from place to place, and help them out of darkness, Maya's veil. Without the fear of pain or search for pleasure, go beyond them both, sannyasin bold. Say Om Tat Sat Om. Thus, day by day, till karma's powers spent, release the soul forever. No more is birth, nor I, nor thou, nor God, nor man. The I has all become. The all is I and bliss. Know thou art that, sannyasin bold. Say Om Tat Sat Om. Thank you for your kind attention. Jai Ma.